This is the audio version of the book Jailer by Acharya Vijay Abhishekar Suriji Maharaj in the voice of Rahul Kapoor Jain. Chapter 5, Equanimity, a shortcut to the well-being of the soul. Query: the worldly code tells one about one's crime, the extent of its punishment, and the sections of law under which the punishment is given. This mentally prepares one to bear the punishment. Also, there is hope that one will be free from the punishment after an ascertained period. However, the court of nature does not tell you anything of that sort. Reconciliation. Yes, you are correct. As earlier said, there is no definite knowledge as to why the son is being beaten by the father. We imagine that a crime must have been committed. In the same manner, if someone is being punished, we must assume that a crime has taken place. By doing that, the mind prepares itself for punishment which is inevitable. We are not told about the duration of the punishment. However, when the punishment is completed, we rid ourselves of miseries automatically. The behavior of the jailer who used to ruthlessly make the prisoner labor changes on completing of the sentence. He releases the prisoner respectfully. The same principles apply to the court of nature. Pavanjay was to wed Anjana Sundari in a ceremony which included many of his relatives. On the night before the wedding, he was very anxious to see how beautiful his future bride was. That night, he and his friend Prahasit went over to Anjana's place incognito. After seeing Anjana's beauty, he fell head over heels in love with her. However, on reaching, they overheard Anjana's friends having a jestful discussion. What had happened was that Anjana's parents had received marriage proposals from two princes, out of which one was Pavanjaya's and other was Vidyutprabh's. Vidyutprabh was a charmashariri, because of which he was bound to be the most virtuous. Given his shorter lifespan, Anjana's marriage was fixed with Pavanjaya. Pavanjaya was also virtuous and chivalrous. Anjana's female friends were talking amongst themselves and teasing her, "Let Vidyutprabh's lifespan be shorter, but he is charmashariri after all. You should get married to him." Pavanjaya, who was disguised, overheard this conversation. He was intelligent and was not unaware about restraints observed by noble ladies. He was cognizant of the fact that on such occasions, silence was the most appropriate deportment of a virtuous lady. Therefore, Anjana's silence would not have irked him. However, Karmasatta had planned to penalize Anjana. It made even clever and loving Pavanjaya to think otherwise. "Anjana is neither standing up for me, nor is she stopping her friends teasing me. Surely she must be in love with Vidyutprabh." The result? Anjana's punishment started from the night of the marriage. Pavanjaya forsook her. However, Anjana was a Mahasati. She had abandoned all sorts of ornamentation due to being separated from her husband. She had become lean. Her face had become withered and dull from pining for her husband. By blaming only her own karma for her misfortune, she had not only averted hatred towards Pavanjaya, in fact, she had kept her love for him intact. 22 years had elapsed, but she did not desire any other man besides Pavanjaya. And when Pavanjaya departed for war, she bent down at his feet to offer him her best wishes with as much love as before. Even yet, at that time, Pavanjaya not only lacked affection towards her, he scorned her with contempt and hatred. After being dishonored in such a way, Anjana broke down and fell to the ground. Her friend Vasantilaka barely managed to bring her back to the palace. Pavanjaya departed. In the evening, the first camp on the shore of the lake was put up. On the strength of Vidyabal, Pavanjaya even constructed a palace there. He who was admiring the beauty of the lake, standing on the balcony of the palace, saw a Chakravaki, a female Chakravak, afflicted due to being separated from her lover. He heard her mournful wailing. Chakravak and Chakravaki spent 12 hours of the day together, and yet they felt so much pain on being separated for 12 hours of the night, he thought. Suddenly, Pavanjaya thought of Anjana. His prejudice for her disappeared, and in its place, love for her blossomed, so much so that he was not prepared to bear even a moment's delay. Due to the power of his Vidyabal, he immediately reached Anjana's palace along with his friend Prahasit. If you ponder deeply, it'll become clear that Pavanjaya, who so far held only prejudice and hatred for Anjana, would have probably thought on seeing Chakravarti's lamentation. How great is Chakravarti's love for her husband that she could not bear even one night's separation from him. And on the other hand, there was Anjana who loved another man. This was the person who did not heed his parents or Prahashit's advice. Now all of a sudden, his bias had vanished and his thoughts had changed. How is this possible? This had become possible. This suggests that the punishment is over. Therefore, the jailer's behavior had changed and the prisoner was free from punishment. Sometimes, a chronic or a long-standing disease, which one has not been able to cure despite trying everything one can, including spending on expensive specialists and medicines, can be eradicated with an ordinary remedy prescribed by an ordinary doctor. This is because the punishment ordered by the court of Karmasatta is over. The cause can be anyone or anything, but the soul is certainly discharged from the punishment. This is an incident which appeared in Gujarat Samachar on 8th of February 2004. In a foreign country, a truck driver named Edwin Robinson met with an accident. Despite being treated, he lost his eyesight in both the eyes. He also became hearing impaired. After being treated with many medicines by many doctors, he could barely hear loud voices and sounds, even with the help of a hearing aid. The doctor informed him that he was blinded for life, as the nerves inside the eyeballs had been damaged. At that time, he was 53 years old. He could no longer drive. He had to use a cane to find his way around. He made a small garden in the courtyard of his house, which he tended to very lovingly. 9 years went by. Once, a tree under which he was standing was struck by a lightning, causing it to fall. He himself fell onto the ground and lost consciousness. When he came to his senses 20 minutes later, he was able to see and hear very clearly. It was a miracle. His doctors were bewildered. Is it possible a person's blindness is cured on being struck by lightning? Once his punishment ended, he could go back to leading a normal life. After 2 or 3 years of hardship, a soul may get impatient and unable to bear the punishment. He should be made to understand that he will be free when the punishment is complete. The length of the punishment depends on the gravity of the crime, and it could last till the end of the life. One must accept this to avoid agitation. Question: what if the punishment is longer than one's life? Answer: the punishment follows you even in your future lives. There are numerous examples in the scriptures where misfortune, poverty, unfavorable physical conditions are prolonged over lifetimes. We can infer from the hidden meanings of the scriptures or from various other examples that if a soul bears miserable punishments, such as facing injustice time and again, heart-rending words spoken to him by others, torture, grievous physical, mental sufferings inflicted by others, with acceptance and equanimity by thinking that it is his own karmas which are wicked, even on being beaten to the point of death and is successful in averting his vexation, aversion and enmity towards the perpetrator despite being oppressed for years on end, then the court of Karmasatta mostly cancels his balance punishment, which is meant to last over not innumerable years but innumerable births in just one strike. There is nothing disputable about the inference that Karmasatta not only cancels his punishment, in fact, it gives him a very respectable position by rewarding him grandly. There is also no exaggeration in stating that bearing tyranny unleashed by others with calm composure is a shortcut to the well-being of one's own soul. Omniscience, which does not manifest even after years of devotional practice, is revealed in a very short time by maintaining equanimity at the time of calamity. This fact is elucidated in numerous examples of Jhanjariya Muni, the 500 disciples of Khandaksuri, Khandak Rishi, and many others. Developing forbearance towards terrible, repeated, prolonged, and unending afflictions, not allowing the feelings of irritation, maintaining equanimity are just some of the remedies to bring all of the above to a knot. On the other hand, for people who rue their unhappiness and keep hating their perpetrators, suffering continues even in the lives to follow. If the perpetrator continues to cause you pain, in spite of many explanations, many compromises or oppositions, and in fact he maximizes his harassment and causes mental annoyance, one should prepare oneself to bear the harassment. If one has to tolerate it, why not endure it with calm so that it comes to an end sooner? It is true that on such occasions, equanimity is very difficult. Yet it is not impossible, since it is so trying and demands arduous efforts to maintain it. Nature is equally generous in granting grand rewards. In such a situation, keeping your even-mindedness is the most important achievement for you. By sustaining your composure, you can achieve much more nirjara than the nirjara and well-being of the soul achieved by an austerite who performs a formidable self-mortification of a month-long fast. You can earn an immeasurable amount of merit by maintaining equanimity, which is much more than that earned by someone donating billions. Losing one's calm is not going to decrease the level of harassment. It will stay the same. Then why not retain calm and composure? The soul can be saved from discord causing artha dhyan when one realizes that miseries or distress cannot be mitigated by crying, lamenting, complaining, wishing ill of the person who made you unhappy, or by desiring to take revenge or creating a feeling of enmity. On the contrary, a situation will arise in future whereby one will have to bear much more misery than before for a longer period of time, because of the complaint against punishment accorded by the court of Karmasatta. There is an implied opinion that determines the punishment to be improper, and this will never be forgiven by Karmasatta. The reason for this is that Karmasatta over infinity has never committed an error whereby a criminal goes caught-free and an innocent person is punished. Karmasatta is exceedingly proud of this track record, and therefore it cannot bear anyone pointing a finger at its procedural prowess. It gets annoyed and enraged with the soul who is unaware of his own crimes and is trying to prove punishment given to it as a mistake. It is a test indeed, but if you keep your practical wisdom and courage intact, you will certainly be able to surmount it. If you overcome it, you will become nature's loved one. Some people ask us in an aggrieved tone, Maharaj Sahib, we have not committed a sin knowingly, have not behaved badly or wished ill for anyone as much as possible. We try and do good deeds and yet our lives are miserable. We are tired. Maharaj, some calamity or the others befalls us always. There is no end to it. Sahib, is it justice on nature's part? There has not been any crime in our lives and yet punishment is aplenty. How does one find an appropriate explanation to the questions these good souls pose? One day a Sadarji passed a restaurant with a board outside that read, Welcome to our eatery. Eat food which you are sure to relish and you will not be charged for it. Payment will be recovered from your sixth generation. The Sardarji was ecstatic reading this. He thought, why should I go to any other place? I should just eat here. Then he thought, who has seen what may happen to my sixth generation? Who will keep a tab on who will recover this amount? I definitely want to have a free meal. And why should I have it alone? I will bring my wife and the kids here too. He went home and told his wife, do not cook our meal at home tonight. I am taking everyone to a restaurant where you can eat to your heart's content. I will not stop you as we do not have to pay for our meal. The moment they were done with the meal, a bill of 2000 rupees was handed to the Sardarji. The Sardarji was dumbstruck. With a mixed feeling of shock and surprise, he went to the manager and asked him, the board outside says the bill payment will be collected from the sixth generation. Then why am I being charged? The bill is not for the food you ate. You are being charged for the sixth generations before you who had eaten here and left the bill for you to pay. We should remember that impoverishment, defeat, insults that we undergo in this life are mostly a payment due by us for deeds done by us in our previous births. The fruits of whatever good or bad we do in this life will be reaped in the coming births. Therefore, if you don't commit sin or an evil deed, you will not be punished in the next life. However, for the crimes committed in the previous birth would you not be punished now and here? What sin had Lord Mahavir committed in his last birth? Who had he been wicked with? On the contrary, he was compassionate towards even those people who had given him terrible afflictions, and yet how many hardships had he to bear? Why? This is because the Lord's karmas were heavy. The Lord's karmas were heavy and ours are light. If a prisoner who bears the punishment without any argument and behaves gentlemanly asks the jailer what crime had he committed after his coming to the jail to be punished so, what would the jailer reply? It would be, "Thank you for maintaining peace after coming to the jail, but you are being punished for your previous evil deeds." Does this not apply to our miseries here? For Lord Mahavir, we say that it was the fruit of his previous karmas. Should we not think the same for ourselves too? Then why complain? We should never forget that punishment is for the crimes, present or past. Many years ago, I had read about a true life incident in a magazine. I will reproduce here whatever I can remember of it. It was a time when India was being ruled by the British. In those days, one judge, a staunch Brahmin, used to go in the mornings to the dry, open banks of River Sabarmati near Ellis Bridge in Ahmedabad for his daily ablution. As was his daily routine, he went to the bank one morning. At the same time, a man was murdered on the bridge of the river. The judge was able to have a good look at the killer in the light from the street lamp. Chance brought the very case to his court. However, the man the police produced in the court as the murderer was not the same man he had seen. Seeing him, the judge thought, "This man is definitely innocent, as I've seen the killer to be someone else." Surprisingly, the evidence produced by the police, testimonies of the witness, and the accused person's own words spoken during interrogation all led to the conclusion that the accused person was the killer. The judge was in a dilemma. His conscience told him that the accused was not the killer, but the procedure of the court proved otherwise and considered him fit for the punishment. Eventually, it is not the justice that prevails, it is the law that supersedes. According to the legal procedure, he had to sentence the accused. But why hang an innocent person? Thinking thus, and also for the appeasement of his own conscience, he sentenced him only to a life imprisonment. The accused was definitely not the killer. So why would he accept such a verdict? He appealed to the High Court. Based upon the proceedings, the judge in the High Court thought, why was the accused given a life sentence of imprisonment? This man has to be hanged to death. Even in the Supreme Court, the sentence was upheld and the date of hanging was fixed. The Brahmin judge was perplexed when he heard about this. His firmly rooted faith in the idiom, "In the reign of the Lord, there may be delay, but never anarchy," was shaken up. In the end, he paid a visit to the accused in the jail on the day before hanging. He spoke openly to him, telling him that his case had come to an end and that he would definitely face the death penalty. He told him he had come to him not as a judge, but as a curious person, and he had a few questions for him. He hoped the prisoner would answer them truthfully. The accused agreed to tell him everything. He had nothing to lose and he would not lie in his last moments. Then the judge asked him, "I was a witness to the murder. Is it not true that you did not commit this crime?" "Yes, Your Honor, this is absolutely true. I am unquestionably innocent in this case." "Then why were you adjudged a criminal by the court? Why did you say things that would prove you to be the murderer? How did your life imprisonment convert to death by hanging? Can you throw some light on this?" With tears in his eyes, the prisoner replied, "Your Honor, at the last moments of my life, I do not want to lie, nor do I want to hide my sins. Many years ago, I had committed a murder, but I was declared innocent. I feel I am now being punished for my earlier crime." The judge's faith in the idiom was reaffirmed. This is a fact. We may think ourselves to be innocent in the present, but if there is a punishment, there ought to have been a corresponding crime committed either in the present or the past. There cannot be a punishment without a crime. And if the punishment is for our crime, then the person executing the punishment has to be the jailer. If he is the jailer, one cannot consider him to be the wicked. nor can one take revenge on him. Question: like us, even the opposite person would not be punished without a crime. If we slap him, don't we also become the jailer? When the jailer gives lashes with a whip, he is not punished. Similarly, we also won't be punished, right? Answer: on the day after the marriage, the bride went back to the parents' house because she was offended. The parents asked her the reason. Even the groom could not find any reason for her behavior. The people from the groom's side went over to the girl's home. Her parents asked her the reasons for her displeasure. "Your son-in-law says, 'I am blemished.'" The bride replied with tears in her eyes. Everyone started looking at the son-in-law. He was bewildered. "When did I say that?" On being questioned, the bride replied, "Why? At night, didn't you say I was like the moon?" Can a simile used to describe the beauty or the joy of gazing at the moon be taken to mean blemished? Any example is to be taken in the context of its relevance. If we try to take it in totality, sometimes there are chances of misrepresentation. The same is applicable to the example of the jailer. When we have to bear appalling behaviors by others, we have to take the perpetrator as the jailer and be as even-minded as we can. We have to be free from anger and enmity. However, when we cause distress to others, we are not the jailer. We become the judge. Karmasatta has not appointed us to be the judge. We are only a conduit. Karmasatta alone has the right to give a punishment. We cannot interfere in this matter. Otherwise, we are fit for punishment and we will be punished. The person who has slapped somebody has done it considering himself to be the judge, and for this, he definitely will be punished in the future. However, just for our own peace of mind, we have to regard him as the jailer. In short, the person harassing us is the jailer, and if we harass someone, we are the judge. Question: isn't this odd? If the other person behaves adversely, he becomes the jailer. If we are discordant, we become the judge. Answer: no, this is not strange. This itself is an ekantvad. Things are different for oneself and others, like in the case of beneficence. If one has been good to someone, one should not remember it. One should forget it. If someone has done you a favor, you should remember it and never forget it. One should never praise one's own good deed, and should not miss out on praising someone else's good deed. It is thus affirmed that when someone behaves unfavorably with us, he is the jailer of the court of Karmasatta. Whereas if we behave adversely towards others, we are the unappointed judge who is interfering with the working of the court of Karmasatta.